What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. It's your boy Marty Bent here on a Friday. It's a Friday afternoon, right? Morning. Friday
yes,
morning.
Yes, sir. What it day is Friday. It is Friday, it's December 27th.
It is yes, Friday, sir. December 27th. We're back for another rip of TFTC. It's the holiday season, but we're here for you freaks. And we're actually not here together for you freaks. We're remote. And I'm actually getting some feedback, Matt. How are things in Long Island right now?
Well, you're hearing feedback from me?
I think you're good. You're good. It's better now.
Either way, the mic, the freaks aren't getting feedback, so that's good.
Yes, we're recording locally. Currently, the price of Bitcoin, according to the TFTC.io ticker, is $7,223.39. Current block height is 610,026. We're less than 20,000 blocks away from the halving, freaks. Don't have the hash rate. We're still getting that back on the site. And it's been a week. How was your Christmas, Matt?
Christmas.
What were your celebrations?
Christmas was fantastic. A lot of family, a lot of love. It's just a great time of the year to just, you know, just... I've found myself a lot this week looking back at the year and looking how far we've come, and it's really been an absolutely amazing year. Just super grateful to be a part of it all.
Yeah, I can't believe it's almost over. Think about where we started at the beginning of the year. Rabbit hole recap in the beginning of the year was what, like 3 months old, if that.
Yeah, what, it was like late August or early September.
Yeah,
it was late August because we forgot our anniversary. Remember, we remembered in like September.
Yeah, started the year off with Bitcoin Tina. We ripped that episode at like the bottom, around like 3,500. We had a nice little pop there in the summer. We had that pop around Bitcoin 2019 to 14,000. We were telling people to market buy it at 13,000 there.
Shake my head.
We're hovering around. Now rubbing around 7,200. It's been a year.
You remember the 10-year anniversary live show on January 3rd or January 10th? I think we did on January 3rd.
Yes, we did it on January 3rd. Five Drink Matt introduced himself to the world.
That was like seven drinks.
You said that no exchanges would add Lightning, and by the end of the year, that was proven wrong.
Yeah, and you know what else? I think a big one that I missed was BTC Pay is just, it's such a massive deal. You know, it's such a big deal. And it was on my radar, but it wasn't on my radar to the proper extent, I think. I think this was very much the year of BTC Pay.
Yes. I think this is going to be the decade of BTC Pay. Decade. Hey, yo, you going to the Birds game this decade? No, BTC Pay is going to keep rolling on. We're all going to keep rolling on here. We got a pretty light roster here today. Before we get into it, we got to give a shout out to our sponsors. Giving is hard. When you donate, how do you know what your charity is going to accomplish with your money? Imagine that you want to help children. You found two trustworthy organizations that run different programs. One can save a child's life for every $300,000 donated, while the other can save a child's life for every $3,000. Obviously, you donate to the one that is 100 times better at saving children's lives. What GiveWell does is, in practice, it's hard to know charities that what they'll do with your donation. GiveWell spends 20,000 hours each year researching your charities so that you can do the most with your money. They recommend a short list of the best charities they found and share them with donors like you. Excuse me. GiveWell's recommendations are free for anyone to use, and they do not take a cut of your donation. So learn how much good your donation can do by visiting givewell.org/TFTC. They accept traditional payment methods as well as Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. First-time donors will have their donation matched up to $1,000 if they donate through givewell.org/TFTC. Again, they're going to match your donation up to $1,000 as long as the match lasts. They're running out of the match. Go to givewell.org/TFTC. This episode of Tales from the Crypt and Rabbit Hole Recap is also brought to you by the Cash App. As you know, Cash App is the simplest way to send and save money, and now it's the simplest way to try to grow your money. Introducing Cash App Investing. Unlike investing tools that only let you buy entire shares of stocks, Cash App lets you instantly invest as little or as much as you want. We're stacking slivers of stocks now, if you so please. This way, when your favorite company stock is just a little too expensive, you can still own a piece with as little as $1. And because Cash App is directly connected to your bank account, you don't have to wait 3 to 4 days for your bank transfer. You can start investing today. Brokerage services are provided by Cash App Investing, a subsidiary of Square and a member SIPC. And as always, you can still stack sats, sell sats, move sats, receive sats on the app. And if you have not downloaded it yet and you are going to download it, make sure you use the code stacking sats. You're going to get $10, and $10 is going to go to our good friends at Owls Lacrosse. So download the Cash App today from the App Store or Google Play Store. And last but not least, our good friends at Unchained Capital, helping us keep the lights on here. Unchained is doing many great things. First, they got their Vaults program, which is a multi-sig setup. You can engage in a multi-sig quorum with Unchained where they hold a key. And if you ever need them to sign, they are there for you. On top of that, they have their collateralized loan program. If you are thinking about selling your Bitcoin, wait a second, reach out to Unchained. They can help you not sell your Bitcoin. You can use your Bitcoin as collateral for a U.S. dollar loan, so you don't have to sell your Bitcoin. And then on top of that, they're a beast in the open source space. With their multi-sig setup, they've open sourced their process there with Caravan, which is a desktop app that'll allow you to set up a multi-sig quorum by yourself without Unchained. So that you can get the level of security that they have in an individual fashion. So go to www.unchained-capital.com today. www.unchained-capital.com today. All right, got through it.
That owl call gets better every episode.
I feel like I'm becoming an owl. I'm actually working on like constricting my neck almost 180 degrees. So I'm getting pretty far.
It's pretty crazy. Bitcoin's up 82% year over year. You know, like everyone who's just like obsesses over the price, you know, and freaks the fuck out all the time. And you just, you know, imagine if you were in a coma, the man in the coma. You just come out of the coma. It's up 82%. You think it's the best year ever.
Right. Man in the coma, forced hodl. Somebody has to go to jail for a couple of years, come out. People are obsessed. I mean, it's the volatility. The volatility, the nature of the volatility is such that it just incites reaction, right? Like it's moving quickly. It's hard not to pay attention.
If you were in a coma in November 2017 and then you woke up today, the price is exactly the same. It's been fucking... That's insane.
Do you imagine that?
It's absolutely insane, right? You know?
Yeah.
Bitcoin, man.
It is... could you imagine how much less stressed out that man in the coma would be, though? He might actually live longer, even having gone through a coma, not having to go through the stress of the news cycles in the last 2 years.
Comas, consider them.
Hey, you can do medically induced comas too. Maybe that might be a trend of the future for people who want to force auto.
Please, let's. I don't want that meme to begin. Let's not.
If you're not starting an accidental boating service, or excuse me, a boating accident service, maybe think about the medically induced coma to force idle.
The problem is, I don't think you could do that in a trustless way, right? You would have to, you'd have to trust someone to actually wake you back up.
Yeah, you'd have to do it with a time lock too, so you know that they're not moving your Bitcoin while you're in the coma.
That's true. This
is interesting. We're gonna spitball on this, freaks. All right. We're going to spitball on this for a couple episodes here. Light list this week. Where do we want to start? Do we want to start Bitcoin? Do we start global macro?
We got to front load this vulnerability disclosure, as is tradition.
Okay. So let's go for it. Bitbox.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw this. You can brute force the passwords like after 10,000 guesses or 1,000 guesses, right?
No, you get up to 1 million guesses at least.
A million guesses.
Basically, million. The secure element, which is supposed to enforce the the ticking time bomb when you put in incorrect passwords, like it ticks down so that the device bricks itself if you've made a certain number of incorrect attempts. Lazy Ninja on Twitter at Freedom Isn't Safe, who's a great adversarial hardware guy. He always looks into all these hardware wallets. He's looked into Cold Card in the past, some of the other ones. He discovered that you can basically see from the power usage if it's incorrect before the secure element realizes it's incorrect. So then you could just reset it real quick and do it again. So this is fixed with the most recent firmware 5.0.0. So if you do have a Bitbox hardware wallet, you should update that as soon as possible.
Yes.
So this requires physical access, of course.
Yes. And that's funny. This is the same company that came hard at Cold Card a couple months ago for disclosure stuff. Again, the hardware wallet world, my advice to all the hardware wallet creators out there is give Peach a chance. You're all sitting on a hardware that is probably susceptible to some form of hack at the end of the day.
I mean, these independent researchers, it's like the best thing ever, right? Like everyone should be attacking each other. Today, the Bitbox is now more secure than it was before. The Cold Card's more secure than it was before. The Trezor is still just as insecure as it was earlier from physical attacks, because that's a hardware issue and they can't update it. But at least people are aware of it. You know, use a strong passphrase if you use a Trezor.
Be aware. Be aware. That was the only vulnerability we have on the list right now.
Yeah, you know, it's Christmas. There's less vulnerabilities during Christmas. BLW. Yeah. I mean, you've never used this wallet, Bitcoin Lightning Wallet on Android. Some positive news. They released support for something called hosted channels. So hosted channels are like kind of like a quasi custodial channel. It's still custodial. You know, third party hosts the channel for you. You are trusting them, but it comes with the benefit that it is transparent, so you see what's going on. So it's like a slightly better custodial option, which is cool to see. You know, it comes with the conveniences that a lot of these custodial solutions offer, while having slightly better trade-offs.
Yeah. It's again, slowly but surely. The optionality expands over to more macro stuff. Argentina local Bitcoin's volume hit an all-time high as capital controls get tighter there. Matt Alborg was tweeting about that earlier this week, and you can find that at Useful Tulips. But yeah, I think I saw somebody tweeting too that Argentinians are beginning to use Bitcoin more as a store of value too, because of these capital controls.
Yeah, we got into an argument about it. Did you see me and Kruger, Alex Kruger, on Twitter?
No, I didn't. I didn't see that. What was that fight about?
I was like, find safety in sats, you know, which is my thing. Of course I'm going to say that. And he was like, please, God, no, don't do that. Like, no one's using it for a store of value. They're just using it to get past capital controls and then get into U.S. dollars. And I was like, well, I'm not going to comment on whether or not they're using it as a store of value because I have no idea. But even if you're using it in that method, you're still finding safety in sats. Like, I don't see how that is, how that's a relevant distinction there, right? Like, if capital controls are your threat, then, you know, skirting them is safety.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know about that. But someone commented underneath, he's like, I'm Venezuelan, plenty of people use it as a store of value.
Yeah. It's like, hey. That dude loves to poo-poo everything.
He wants to be contrarian, you know. It's good for engagement. I respect him. I'm glad he's in the space. I'm glad he tries to keep us honest. And as you see, we wouldn't have had the Venezuela. I said Venezuela. We wouldn't have had the Argentinian underneath there commenting and providing light there if he hadn't given that comment, right? One thing to keep in mind is that the weekly volume, even though it was all-time high, is still only 430,000 US dollars. So, you know, it's not negligible volume, but it's not exactly huge.
No, I think, but, and also local Bitcoin volumes, but also just like a leading indicator and like the tip of the iceberg, right? I would imagine as volumes hitting all time high, to me, that's probably new users coming on for the first time, a lot more new users. And then I'm like pretty much convinced that a lot of these people are just setting up connections like after one or two transactions and just transacting in private after that off of local Bitcoins.
Yeah. Why would you use, I would never use local Bitcoins for like repeat transactions, right? You like already have your dealer and you just reach out to them directly going forward. So you cut them out. You cut local Bitcoins out.
So this was local Bitcoin's volume is going up across the world. Matt's continuing to do some great research. He was tweeting about another country earlier this week too. Let me find it real quick. They hit all-time high volume as well on Paxful. Give me a second here.
UsefulTulips.org is great. So definitely keep an eye on that. It's one of those things I check like once a week. Just take a look and stay abreast of what the volumes are looking like across the world.
Yeah, I can't find this tweet right now, but volume's going up on the P2P exchanges. So P2P exchanges, people use that for privacy, right? P2P, you don't want to give up their name, you don't want to deal with people. Over the weekend, because it feels like it's a Monday, but during the week, we found out that an original Ethereum founder, one of the developers, I believe he developed the Ether Real, the Go client for Ethereum. We were able to see that he moved 92,000 Ethereum to Kraken, I believe, to sell. And the reason we were able to tell that is because he had linked his wallet to one of the ENS, the ETH naming system, whatever it is, the .eth thing. Like, he linked his name to that. That sort of linked his stash to that name. And when he moved his ETH to Kraken earlier this week, we were able to know that it was him, one of the original developers, one of the founders moving to dump so that he can develop his video game.
Well, to be fair, first of all, it was pretty clear that the stash had come from the ICO pre-mine. Just to note, this was $11.5 million worth of ETH. This guy also was one of the main developers behind Geth, which is like, I think their leading client. So he wasn't like a nobody, but he had stepped back. You know, Ethereum has like 50 co-founders. They have a lot of co-founders. So this is one of them. I never really heard of him. I was following him, but I guess I never just like registered exactly who he was. So we knew right away, because it's a transparent ledger, we knew right away that these funds were coming from the pre-mine. Some people said it was connected to Vitalik. And then we were able, Trust Nodes was able to connect it to Jeffrey Wilk because he had linked it to his name through Ethereum name service, as you said, that .eth that you see everywhere on Twitter from the ETH people. They've had plenty of situations where they have dApps and stuff that link your real ID. I mean, do you remember PeepEth? Twitter clone? A bunch of people inadvertently linked their funds to their names through that.
I remember you were like researching, like you were able to find some people on crypto Twitter who like had a lot of ETH.
Yeah, I doxed our buddy Nick Carter. It was like right in the beginning of our friendship too, and I'm glad we're still friends after that. But I mean, if an Ethereum co-founder can fuck this up, anyone can fuck it up. And it's just a very risky idea. Like, you know, Ethereum, for starters, uses this account-based model, so they don't use new addresses every time by default. So you link one of these accounts to your real identity, whether that's through an IP address, whether that's through publicly posting to PeepEth, whether that's Ethereum name service with your real name. And then from there, it's trivial to compare everything else because you're not even, at least with, you know, Bitcoin's UTXO model, like you can figure it out. But at least there's still some level of plausible deniability if you're not reusing addresses. But with the account model, you know, you're just, everything's going to that same address. You see all the tokens that are in there. You see everything, every transaction. So this is, you know, people got to be careful. If you're using Ethereum, you got to be careful. You're not, you know, don't reuse your account, I guess. I don't know. Just don't link it to your name. The other thing is, you know, everyone jumped to the conclusion that he dumped, and he did dump because he admitted it on Twitter later when he was like raging at everyone that was giving him shit about it. But he could have been going leverage long at Kraken, you know, or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like he didn't necessarily.
But people jumped to. Yeah, so let's get into this point of this topic is like, what does it say that one of the founders is dumping a huge stash of his initial initial distribution to develop a video game. And that's what like a lot of the conversation around this particular action was about, like the original vesting schedule of ETH and the ICO. And I just found that poetically hilarious that that's what it like, oh, we should have had a better vesting schedule. It's like, no, you should have a POW launch where everybody gets a, like all this shit. Just, again, we talk about social scalability in these systems. Like this is a 0-day social scalability bug within Ethereum, the initial distribution. It's a 0-day bug that'll haunt it its whole existence.
There was no vesting schedule, right? It was just they just got the money. So I mean, yeah, I mean they shouldn't have gotten the pre-mine to begin with, right? But at this point, like I think it's hilarious that they're giving him shit for it. Like it's his fucking money. Like you gave it to him.
Yeah,
with it up until this point. Well, he can't dump it when he wants. I'm sure he wished he had better privacy about it, though.
Yes. No, that's what I feel bad for the guy. Like, the dude did a lot of hard work. Like, one, if you design the initial distribution in this way, like, don't get mad when people cash out at some point. Like, it's just going to happen. Like, seeing everybody, like, scream for altruism at this guy. Like, oh, you should have donated to this project, to that project. You could reinvest it. Like, shut the fuck up. This guy's made his money. He can do whatever the fuck he wants to do with it. Like, don't try to shame him because he's spending his money how he wants to. Like, it's a flaw in the way the system was designed, not in this guy's choice in life.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say the distinction here, where like I give like Charlie Lee more shit, and I would give Vitalik more shit, is that he wasn't like out in front, you know, shilling the project, at least from my.
Yeah,
but like I said, he can still go fuck himself for the pre-mine, but to then make the distinction that, oh, then he can't spend the pre-mine as he deems fit, like 4 years after the fact, when you guys were all fine with it this whole fucking time, is pretty hilarious.
Yeah,
and it just goes to show once again why we think, imagine if he was malicious about it, right? Instead of just dumping right away, and capitulating, like if he just kept moving it around to spook the markets and had leverage shorts, you know, on BitMEX and stuff like that, he can completely play with the markets. So yeah, that's interesting. And I think this is also why it's kind of good that a lot of these exchanges do have leverage capabilities to go long, with the collateral being the underlying, because you can't make that assumption right away when it gets sent to an exchange. Otherwise the markets get spooked super quick. But yeah, it's just something that's inherent with these chains right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, and again, going back to social scalability, there's a couple of social scalability 0 days in a lot of these blockchains. And I think initial distribution is 1 0-day that a lot of people are extremely blind to, specifically, Ethereum.
Well, it was kind of funny, too, because Vitalik was trying to do, like, an about-face about the pre-mine earlier this week, and then it just all, like, kind of blew up in his face. He was saying, like,
oh, we only pre-mined 11%.
Yeah, he said sending Bitcoin to the contract address was essentially mining, which, like, means every ICO was a mined ICO. Yeah, okay, bro.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
They're gonna try and gaslight everything. They are trying to gaslight everything. Did you see that that one tweet about, like, trying to say that DAI was the first stablecoin, like Compound's the first DEX, like,
yeah, yep.
They're trying to rewrite the history. So DAI is not the first successful stablecoin. And if you want to talk about like distributed stablecoin, BitShares was the first one, right?
Yeah, I mean, distributed with quotation marks, but I guess same with DAI, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And first DEX, nobody ever talks about Counterparty. The Counterparty built the first DEX in their wallet. Counterparty built the first non-fungible tokens. And that whole tokenomics idea really started on top of Bitcoin with Counterparty.
I mean, I don't think it really matters who's fucking first if it's not like a long-lasting project. Like if it's built on quicksand and you just get there first so you can yell first, you know, there's no value. There's really no value there. So it's like kind of a moot point to begin with.
No, I think the Trailblazers who tried the ideas first should get the credit. Like, trying to say that DAI was the first stablecoin is just a slap in the face. So even if they were bad implementations, bad ideas, it's not like anybody didn't try them before and to a certain and with a certain amount of success. Like, those projects before Ethereum, not huge success, but they had a certain amount of success within a niche realm that we're in. And considering the size at the time, like, it was Counterparty was pretty successful considering how small the whole space was at the time.
I mean, but BitUSD was like a complete failure and a garbage project that no one used.
It was Larimer's first scam.
Yeah, so we're gonna, oh, it was the first, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, but scammers have done it before. I'm just trying to put forward my belief that there's a lot of white gaslighting going on right now. A lot of gaslighting.
Yeah, a lot of history revision. You know, talking about history revision, we had CSW, the famous fake Toshi. He came out, you know, this whole time he's been saying that he has this Tulip Trust where he holds his 800,000 Bitcoin, you know, because he's Satoshi, and he's not going to get access to it till January 2020. And a lot of us said, well, that was obviously bullshit. I mean, like, imagine Satoshi, like, creates this whole trust minimized system for restoring value, and then he, like, puts it in a blind trust that's, like, led by the legal system. It's the most ridiculous concept ever. But anyway, now that he has this issue with the Kleinmans in Florida, in the court, where he's supposed to give them a bunch of that Bitcoin, mixed with the fact that he can't actually access the Bitcoin, there was a whole article in Bloomberg today about his excuses for why he's not going to be able to access it in January, which is, you know, exactly what most of us expected. So that's pretty fucking funny.
Can we stop talking about Craig Wright after this? I think if the Tulip date, original date, comes and passes and those coins aren't moved, we should ignore, don't appease that motherfucker. He's an idiot. Like, stop paying attention to Craig Wright after the Tulip date comes and passes, which is very soon.
Was it the 3rd or the 10th?
I think, yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, that's why I didn't say his name, even though you said his name. I used the initials. But I just thought it was great to...
I'm not yelling at you.
Yeah, it's an important time to dunk because, you know, we've had to deal with this shit for years. So... We'll only cover him when it's dunkage.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
No, I was screaming at the abyss there. Not at you, Matthew.
That's fair. Screw you, abyss.
Yeah. Petro looks like it's getting implemented, the Venezuelan Petro. I saw Javier Bastardo, who's becoming one of my favorite followers on to get information about Bitcoin in Venezuela. He was tweeting earlier this week a video of a bunch of senior citizens at line at some vendor that
grocery
was
store.
Accepting, yeah, grocery store that was accepting Petro payments, and it's a biometric system. You have to be, you have to be a part of the party, a party member, a senior citizen, and you have to give up your fingerprint as well. It's like, it looks like they're paying via their fingerprints. Like, that's how they have to pay.
Yeah, it's retirees and other pensioners, and they're calling them bonuses. You know, obviously they're paying them out in this pseudo cryptocurrency that's completely centralized and, you know, completely owned by the state, controlled by the state. And the only way they can redeem them is with their fingerprint. And obviously they have to be a card-carrying party member. So they have to, you know, bend their knee. And the lines are crazy because there's so few stores that accept it. And I guess lines there in general are, you know, pretty bad right now because the economy. But extra bad at the places that accept the Petro. Did Javier actually post this video that I posted today? Did I miss that?
No, it wasn't that one.
He had the lines, right? The lines of the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, this video of people in lines, yeah.
Yeah, so I had a source who wanted to be anonymous who sent me the actual promo video, and it's pretty fucking crazy promo video. It's, you know, it's worth watching where they're like, oh, it's the Petro, it's the future of money, and it like shows them how they have to use their fingerprint and everything, and tries to normalize this idea that you pay with fingerprint, which is like the worst, from a privacy point of view, is like the worst idea ever. And from a security point of view, it's not even that secure because people can lift fingerprints pretty easily. Fingerprints should not be used as a password.
Yeah, yeah. Be aware. I mean, this is to be expected in places like Venezuela. Like we all know the Petro is bullshit, and it's just interesting. Like what is the ledger that is being amended at the end of the day with these this biometric system? Like, is there a ledger at all?
Yeah, it's a dash fork. So there is a ledger. They just control all the nodes. And it's supposedly backed by assets, you know, similar to something like Tether. So then you also have to trust them that the assets are actually being held somewhere, which, you know, doubtful they are. So it is really just all bullshit. But it's another way for them to print money, and it's another way for them to surveil their populace. So of course they're all for it.
Yeah, and they're not the only ones. This is a hot theme around the world. Hong Kong, this is a big thing this week. The police froze $9 million raised by activists via Spark Alliance, and I believe this was an HSBC account, correct?
I think the other one was HSBC. I think this was a... Was this also HSBC? I thought this was a different bank. There was another... they froze someone else's funds.
Spark Alliance platform. Yeah, Spark Alliance platform.
Oh, no, it was, like, it is HSBC. Both of them are HSBC. HSBC has been closing a bunch of accounts. But yeah, it's another perfect example of why, Bitcoin is inherently seizure resistant. You know, it's not perfect, but you can't just press a few buttons at HSBC and just lock all the accounts.
Well, and it's, again, a theme of this podcast might be poetic. It's poetic that HSBC is doing this, and just think about like all the controls, all these capital controls, all these KYC AML laws and compliance that they throw on you. It's under the guise that they are here to protect you, here to fight against money laundering, here to stop the drug dealers, the terrorists. When HSBC, a bank that's supposed to be compiling with these AML, KYC AML laws and looking for these money launderings, literally created bank windows with specific dimensions for briefcases that Mexican drug lords could push cash through, that they could facilitate money laundering. All these laws and all these capital controls and all this compliance that you have to put up with, all the personal data you have to give up to just participate in the financial system, is under the guise that they are there to protect you from drug dealers, terrorists, and pornographers and child molesters. Yet the banks that are supposed to comply are literally working behind your back to make it so they can launder money for these institutions. It's not to protect you. They want to control you. It's capital controls. They want to control your capital. Speak up against these fucking fascists.
Yeah, it's ineffective. It's dangerous. And then when they get caught actually doing it at scale for like the real bad guys, they get a slap on the wrist, and it's just the cost of doing business. I mean, there's like a massive irony here. Like, I wanted to go back to Venezuela. We moved away really quick. I mean, the big irony of Venezuela is that the Venezuelan government understands that Bitcoin has a lot of value and will continue to accrue value. They are accumulating Bitcoin. It appears that it's very likely that they're accumulating Bitcoin, but at the same time, they created their own shitcoin that they're putting on their people, right? So it's not that these people don't realize. They absolutely realize, and they just do this doublespeak bullshit to control us and at the same time benefit themselves, right? So, you know, it's fucking bullshit, and I think the freaks know that, so it's good.
It's all about control, but that's what I wrote about in the Bend today. Like, there's a bunch of people passively wandering through a labyrinth that was designed to control them, to make them act in a certain way. And again, it's all under the guise that the levers that are there to control you are put there under the guise that they're there to protect you. And they don't protect you. They don't do the things they say they're going to do. All the bad stuff still happens, and they facilitate it. Like, fight back. This is not fair. I'm sorry. I'm really, really pissed off here right now.
Yeah, you should be.
HSBC in particular is fucking, like, the fact that they're able, or they're, like, acting holier than thou to stop money from flowing to these protesters after being so hypocritical with the Mexican drug lord stuff. It just, like, pisses me off.
Yeah, it's super infuriating because, you know, I have an HSBC account, and they, like, make me go through so many fucking hoops, like, just to get, like, a $50 cashier's check, you know? And I'm, like, fully KYC'd and everything through them. Like, they know everything about me, like, all my transactions. Like, why are you making me... Why does it take me an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, and I have to disclose all this information about my $50 cashier check? And meanwhile, hundreds of millions of dollars you're laundering, you know? It's, like, absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
On a more positive note, I don't have this on the list, but I listened to Peter McCormick's What Bitcoin Did with these two guys from El Salvador. El Salvador has, you know, has a horrible economy, and they're running a Bitcoin charity down there where they employ kids, and they teach them about Bitcoin and pay them in Bitcoin. And they have this whole, like, circular economy where they have merchants and stuff who accept Bitcoin. So it's definitely worth a listen. You know, it's one of the ways that Bitcoin is helping around the world in these places. It's not all negative stuff. There's a lot of positive going on out there. And one of the interesting things, I thought, one of the interesting takeaways was that, you know, a lot of times we talk about, because we're self-custodying our assets, our Bitcoin, it puts you at bigger risk of theft. Actually, in El Salvador, they think of it as the opposite, because it's a very cash-dominated economy. If you imagine you're a kid and you're walking around with some cash in your pocket, it's way more likely that that cash gets stolen than Bitcoin does, because, you know, there's some information asymmetry there where, you know, a gang guy will not realize, you know, that there's money on the phone, like, protected by a PIN or something like that. So it's just an interesting perspective that we don't really cover often. I thought that was pretty cool.
It's good to see the people who need it most using it. And then actually the $5 wrench attack is something everybody's scared of, but the people who actually need it most are like, it's not that bad.
Well, it's just cash is just easier to $5 wrench. But yeah,
that's true. On to dystopian surveillance watch. Popular chat app, TikTok.
Not TikTok. Removed
from the App Store.
TikTok.
Not TikTok. TikTok. This is from the United Arab Emirates. Very popular app. And basically, I believe that all the data was just going straight to the government. They're spying on everybody. Was it, like, were people outside of the UAE using this?
Yeah. So there was, like, a lot of usage in the Middle East in particular, but also it was, like, on the top of the app stores, on both app stores. I think part of the reason they named it TikTok was because people thought they were downloading TikTok, you know, so which is a Chinese app that's probably doing exactly the same thing. But these apps are ideal because instead of hacking people, you just get them to give you all their messages, all their contacts, their location data, photos, like all the permissions that these apps take. And all it takes is that one app that's the weakest app, and it can just siphon all of your data off your phone. And that's not complicated at all. It's super cheap for them to do. You know, they got, like, a third-party contractor built this app for them. They didn't have to build the app. So it's just, you got to be really aware about what you install on your phone, what information you keep on your phone. You know, this information can really, you know, we talked about the New York Times, about all that location data that they talked about. This information, especially in aggregate, can give so much detail about what you do. You know, this is why all these KYC laws are so dangerous, because if you can see every transaction that someone has made, you get a really good picture of what they do, and then you can control them from that aspect.
Yeah, it's scary shit, man. And staying on this topic, TikTok is a cursed app. Just delete it if you have it. It's making people do weird things.
Forget about that. I mean, first of all, TFTC is not on TikTok. We're proudly not supporting TikTok. But it's a Chinese company. You know, they're just siphoning all of your, regardless of what it's doing to people on a social level, just this idea that you're like giving this app permissions on your phone is highly questionable. And I consider it an attack. I consider it a Chinese attack, a Chinese state-sponsored attack. If they can get one of the, just as much as, you know, if not more so, but the same idea as Facebook is a state-sponsored attack against the rest of the world, right? Because it gives the Americans eyes into all these people's phones. But, you know, the Chinese are better at this shit, and they unilaterally act. So there's like no doubt in my mind that TikTok is just is being used for basically collection of data from people's phones.
Yes. Be aware.
And especially if you're doing like Bitcoin things, you're just going to get sent, like, what, you're going to build a following on TikTok? Like, they're just going to fucking close your account. Like, you're just wasting your time. There's absolutely no reason for Bitcoin just to be on TikTok. But there's my rant.
TikTok is a cursed app, I'm convinced. It's not good for the children. The U.S. government is warning service members, asking them not to use DNA testing services. They don't want to dox themselves.
Did you read the letter? The letter's fucked, man. I mean, when the U.S. government starts saying shit like that, and I'm pretty sure like the U.S. government is part of the, you know, surveillance of these DNA apps, like, you know it's a real issue. Like, they're worried that this information will get out. And as we talked about earlier, you know, one of the most dangerous parts about this is you're not even giving up just your privacy. You're giving up all your past and future relatives' privacy as well, since they have DNA connection to you. This is a quote from the Office of the Secretary of Defense. There is increased concern in the scientific community that outside parties are exploiting the use of genetic data for questionable purposes, including mass surveillance and the ability to track individuals without their authorization or awareness. Scary shit.
What are we doing? Freaks, what the fuck are we doing? What, like, we have to take a step back and think about the systems that we're building and the future that we're building. Like, we're speeding forward into the digital age without a lot of contemplation and reflection, I think, especially with these big issues like data and DNA storing. We got to think about this stuff. I think there really needs to be a massive conversation on a global scale about data security. And again, going back to like how much control the state and all these corporations and banking apparatus should have over individuals. Like, we talk about this a lot, but we are getting near, I fear, a point of no return in which we may not be able to fight back against the control that they want to imbue on us.
Yeah, I mean, I think like historically humans have just rushed into things without thinking through the long-term consequences. In this case, as you said, like, it's particularly dangerous because it's going to be hard to come back from it. You know, like, if we have all these DNA databases leaked around and shared around and stuff like that, like, generations and generations of people are being doxxed. So, you know, like, if my financial transactions get leaked, like, my grandson should be okay. You know, there's no risk there there's limited risk there for him. You know, he might be poor, but like, there's limited risk there for him. If my DNA gets leaked, he's doxxed. He's in a database. You know, they know his exact genetic breakdown. They can frame him for crimes. They can surveil him easier. And forget about, I mean, I don't even know, we're going to get just straight into sci-fi. I mean, like, cloning and shit. Like, who the fuck knows? So it's an issue. It's a major fucking issue.
Maybe, like, that's actually a good point. Like, we'll get to the point where courts may not be able to use DNA evidence because the probability that it was fabricated evidence pulled from some DNA bank being higher than it would have been previously, right? Like, the probability is a lot higher than it was 10 years ago that somebody could do this to try to frame somebody.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a positive element. This is what I think about, like, deepfakes, right? Like, I'm, like, excited for deepfakes because it's basically, like, coin join for your face and your voice. So, yeah, you know, you can also, maybe rich people in like 20 years, 30 years will just make a ton of clones of themselves so they have plausible deniability. There's just like a bunch of Matt Odells running around.
Oh, no, Matt.
I'm not saying I'm going to do it, but I'm just saying, like, you could see, you know, someone doing that, right? Presumably. Then you get the organs and shit, and you get plausible deniability. I don't know. That's got really dystopian really quick. I got to reading too much sci-fi. I got some good sci-fi books for Christmas. Did anyone get, in your family, get DNA tests for Christmas?
No, no.
It's a good sign.
I've scolded everybody not to do that.
Same with me. There was none. There was no Alexas. There was no Google Homes. There was no DNA test. I'm super proud. Super proud of the family that no one even considered it as an option.
Yeah. No. Very. Yeah. No electronics. We didn't get any electronics, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. It was all clothes and kind of nice whiskey set. We're gonna have some old fashions when we meet in person the next time.
I love it. I got two bottles of scotch and a bottle of bourbon. So there's people, they know me well. They know me well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's scary. All right, on to lighter news, into more positive stuff. How can we help fight against this? We need to educate ourselves, right? We need to educate ourselves, number one, that there is a problem, and then two, that there are solutions to these problems. And we believe that Bitcoin is a big solution, particularly to the financial sovereignty and privacy problem. And our good friend, Gigi, has released 21 Lessons as a book. He's had the website that we've talked about before in the past, but now you can officially buy the 21 Lessons book on Amazon, which is huge. It's a good way to learn about the philosophies behind Bitcoin. I think the 21 Lessons book or series is particularly, again, number three of the podcast, is good because of the angles. It attacks the essence of Bitcoin from many different angles, and it helps anybody from any perspective find something to get interested in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, Gigi's a good friend. I love Gigi. He's at DerGigi on Twitter, at DerGigi on Twitter. 21 Lessons is fucking great. It's good to see it on book. I'm going to start poking him so he starts selling it for Bitcoin. I don't think he's selling it for Bitcoin yet. It's only on Amazon, but it's a good first step in that direction. He's come a long way this year as well. I'm super excited for him. So yeah, everyone should consider going and buy that book. It's really good starting point for people. And there was another great book that got released the last couple of weeks by Kiara Bickers, at Kiara Bickers on Twitter, called Bitcoin Clarity. And I'm like a quarter of the way through that one. It's great. It's a really fantastic. She did a really good job. There's like these diagrams that are just the diagrams, like really make, you know, the book's called Bitcoin Clarity. They would make it really clear, like how Bitcoin works. So I also highly recommend that book.
Yeah. I was DMing with Kiara over the holiday break. We're going to get her on the podcast next time she's in New York. She's,
yes.
A very good underrated Bitcoiner. She's been around for a while.
Yeah. I think she was at Blockstream. Was she at Blockstream for a little bit?
Yeah, she was. She worked at Blockstream for a while. And then, yeah, now she's got this book out. Yeah, Kiara, underrated.
I met her in San Francisco. Out there. I met her in San Francisco. She's great.
I have not met her in person yet. I'm very much looking forward to the day we meet in person.
They were like, forget who introduced me. Someone was like, Kiara, you have to meet Matt. When your book comes out, he's a good guy to get to shill it. So here we are. What is like 8 months later? It came to fruition. I've shilled the book. It's a great book. It's a solid book. I only shill things I believe in. And fortunately, yes. She made a book that is very good.
Yes. And then on that note, Proof of Keys is next week. So January 3rd is the Proof of Keys initiative. If you want to take your keys into your own hand and prove that these exchanges are hold the Bitcoin that they say they do. January 3rd is the day in which Bitcoiners are going to do proof of keys. We recommend you do proof of keys all the time. And I will note, actually somebody did, I was looking for the tweet, but I couldn't find it, but somebody did tweet at us saying that they initiated a withdrawal from Coinbase earlier this week, and it's not going to hit their wallet until January 3rd. So if you're trying to do proof of keys on January 3rd. It seems on Coinbase particularly, it's going to take, you're not going to be able to get them that day.
Well, I mean, well, first of all, a lot of these exchanges have limits, withdrawal limits, like our sponsor, Cash App, they have withdrawal limits on a weekly basis. So you want to do this.
This guy was trying to take $50 off.
Yeah, but I think with Coinbase, like if you do a bank transfer, they like you have to wait. He just purchased it. He purchased it and it went to withdrawal right away. They never let you. I'm pretty sure they never let you withdraw right away. At least that's how it used to be when I used it like years ago. But yeah, I like not your keys, not your coins. Like the word. You should just never be keeping large amounts on exchanges and brokers. You should be pulling them out right away as soon as possible, a constant process. You shouldn't be trying to like pull off all your funds in a super panicky way like on January 3rd. That's like the worst way of handling it. You need to just be constantly like learning how to custody your coins better, and slowly and steadily stuff off.
Especially if you're new and you're just getting into this, don't feel any pressure to like be part of the gang, proof of keys. Make sure you know what you're doing first. Like practice. It's not extremely straightforward. It's something that should be taken very seriously, and just make sure you know what you're doing. Get a level of comfort, okay?
Yeah, don't wake up on January 3rd and like send all of your money to like a mobile wallet. Yeah, this is like a horrible idea in that respect. So you got to be careful about it, but it just should be a constant process. Like every time you buy, you should be withdrawing. Every time you buy, you should be withdrawing. Just use it as an on-ramp. Don't use it as a wallet.
Yes, exactly.
And use CoinJoin in between there so that they can't follow your funds afterwards. Otherwise, they can see all your past and future transactions. And they still might be able to if you fuck up CoinJoin, but at least it'll be more difficult. And if you do it right, it'll be way more difficult.
And hopefully we get things like PayJoin in the future where every transaction is a coin join. Shout out that thread, John Newberry, good friend of the show, did an incredible thread on Monday, forward looking about the technologies that might come to Bitcoin. And it's very promising. Like if a lot of the stuff does get added, it seems that Bitcoin's future is going to be more scalable, more UX friendly and more private. Which is very good.
I mean,
it's just going to take time.
I get sick of the prediction posts this time of year, but John's was the best one. If there was, that should have just been the only prediction thread or post or interview or whatever of the whole year. I would be completely fine with it.
That was the best part. It wasn't even like a prediction thread. It was like, hey, here's what's actually being worked on.
Yeah, this is what he wants. It's like what John's vision is. We definitely should link it. It was great. I just wanted to note that Gavin Andreessen, former Bitcoin Core maintainer, potential
shitcoin founder.
Yeah, he
definite spook.
Did you see his quote retweet? Oh fuck
yeah! Yeah, about the Lightning Network. So the Lightning Network won't be ready till 2022.
Yeah, like fuck you, Gavin. Like, how do you read that thread? Like this most positive, constructive thread from John, just fucking hustling every day. And you give this lowbrow fucking comment. Like, if there's any people that still think like, oh, maybe he was acting in good interest. Like, come on, man. Like, it's fucking ridiculous.
What's his shitcoin name? Isn't he the creator of Peercoin?
No, that is alleged. That was Sunny something. It was under a NIM. A NIM created it, but a lot of people think it was him. And that he wanted to move Bitcoin to like a more centralized proof of stake model, but yeah, he's done tons of questionable things, and in best case scenario, he's super
CIA.
Naive. Yeah, in the best case scenario, he's super naive. In the worst case scenario, he's just a government spook who's acting with bad intentions. And I when he posts shit like that on such a positive thread, like it's really like impossible to give him the benefit of the doubt. You just can't.
No, fuck that dude. He's a perfect example of don't find any heroes in the space. Like a lot of people clung on to him early days. Like even us, don't look at us. Like don't like even who am I even say that you would even think like that, but like honestly, don't like, just think for yourself. What I'm trying to get at is think for yourself.
Yeah, don't trust
us. Don't
cling
on to anybody.
Don't trust us. Yeah. Don't trust anybody. Be skeptical. Always be paranoid. You know, be ready to slay your heroes whenever necessary.
Yeah. One thing that I put on the end here that we didn't talk about, I think we should talk about, is the pictures of people lining up to buy gold in Germany this week. Apparently, on January 1st, the limits through which you can buy gold anonymously without having to do KYC AML are going to drop from 10,000 euro to 2,000 euro. So you're going to have an 80% drop in the amount of gold you can buy without having to register your personal information. And this was 2 years ago, the limit was 15,000 euro. And then in 2021, after they drop it from 10 to 2,000 euro this year, they're going to drop it from 2,000 euro to 1,000 euro in 2021. So it seems that in Germany, at least, the government is trying to crack down on gold buyers, and they're trying to make it harder for them to get it anonymously, and they want to know who's owning gold. And our friend Giacomo Zucco pointed out that the only reason that they want to KYC AML gold buyers is so that they can confiscate it later. They know who owns the gold, they know how much they have, and they can go confiscate it later. That's what these laws for gold particularly are getting more draconian.
Yeah, the first step for confiscation is figuring out who has everything. It's the same with Bitcoin. It's the same with cash. This is why, like, two of the biggest competitors to Bitcoin is cash for private payments and gold for store of value. And we see governments around the world cracking down on both, right? And it should be, by design, should be harder for them to crack down on Bitcoin. And that's why Bitcoin is so important. You know, it's to people that say, like, compare them as alternatives. You know, I always argue back that they won't be alternatives for very long. So, you know, something to consider.
That, and like, pay attention, like slowly but surely, just look at these headlines. It's, they're tightening the ropes around you. Like, they are, the writing seems to be on the wall that they know something is wrong. And when they know something is wrong, and they being the kleptocratic political and banking system that rules the world today, they try to clamp down and control again. They want to control you. They want to control your capital. They want to control where you can spend, what you can do, who you can talk to, what you can see, where you can go. It's all about control. And they want to control you. And signs like them not allowing you to buy gold without giving up your personal information is not a good sign. They want to, in some way, use that to control you in the future.
And a lot of this is probably because they're moving into negative rates. And if they move into negative rates, they don't want people like pulling their money out of the banks and storing them in gold or cash at home to escape that, what basically amounts to an additional tax. And let's be frank here. Like, this has happened before. Like, we had the Executive Order 6102 in the 30s in America. This was exact playbook they did. You know, they first figured out who had the gold, and then they confiscated the gold from them, and they, you know, they gave them a bullshit market price that they got redeemed at, and then gold price went up afterwards after they confiscated everyone's gold. So you know, if you don't take these matters into your own hands, there's no one's out there is going to protect you. You know, you just gotta, you know, your future family is counting on you, and you got to handle that.
Yeah. Be aware. Sorry if this rip of RHR was a bit depressing, but these are heavy topics. Heavy topics. A lot going on. Matt, speaking of family, you have to go embark on a lunch with yours.
Yes, I do. But it's, you know, it's important. You know, Bitcoin never sleeps, so neither does TFTC, right? So here we are beaming live into your ears every week.
Yes. Yeah, let us know what you freaks think. Join the conversation. We forgot to read a shout out this week. I'm going to get to that next week. I'm sorry. Going to read the shout out next week. I'm just on the back burner this week, just to let you know. We got one shout out. And yeah, let us know what you freaks think about this. If you're liking it, smash subscribe, share it. every review, every rating helps. Every tweet, retweet, like on YouTube, goes a long way.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love, freaks.